This is Paul Myers. We're on the phone tonight with Jeff Walker, the creator of ProductLaunchFormula.com. Jeff is a wizard at creating and launching products in a wildly successful way. He's been one of the guiding forces, I think would be a fair way to put it, behind a number of million-dollar launches and has a product called Product Launch Formula at the unlikely URL of ProductLaunchFormula.com, which explains how to do this in the very big way. Today we're going to try and cover something that's a little bit more modest. We're going to go over how to develop, briefly how to develop and more how to launch a product for a person with minimal experience, a relatively low-cost product, few or no contact, and a small budget. We're starting with the assumption of a $200 initial budget and $20 a month to spend, which is something that I think pretty much everybody can afford. So, Jeff, welcome to the call this evening.
Thank you very much, Paul. Glad to be on.
And we're definitely glad to have you here. Anything you wanted to say about, by way of introduction or a little bit more about your background?
Yeah, I think the first thing I'd like to lead with is, yes, I've been involved with million-dollar launches. I've been, you know, involved with launches that did just crazy amounts of money. Frank Kern did $370,000 in something like 9 minutes. I know when I launched my last product, even though I was virtually pretty much unknown in the market, I did $100,000 in an hour. These techniques of mine have been used with great success. And these numbers are almost hard to believe unless someone knows everything behind them. But the thing I want to stress is they don't happen overnight. When you say $100,000 in an hour, it's not like you snap your fingers. There's a lot that goes into developing that. And also, I don't want people to measure themselves against those numbers or think those numbers are just inconceivable. I could never do something like that. Because if you master, I mean, the first time I did a product launch, it was more like, we're talking thousands of dollars, a few thousand dollars. And frankly, you know, I just talked to someone recently who bought my course. And this is one of the students that I'm most proud of. He bought the course. What happened was he had a business selling an information-based product, and the product was a multimedia tutorial. So it taught people how to create multimedia, you know, videos and audios. And he had this business that was going along making some decent sales. And then he had just a horrific tragedy in his family. And this tragedy was terrible. It was a car accident. If you've ever been through that type of a tragedy before, your world just gets rocked. And what happened was he just totally lost focus on his business. He almost forgot his business existed for, you know, 2 or 3 months. And what happens then with a lot of businesses, it became, fairly moribund. It was, you know, just creeping along, not much happening. He bought my product launch formula and used it to relaunch this. And his business, you know, he put together a special and did a relaunch of his business and did about $3,100 in a couple weeks time frame. And so that was a lot more than he had done up to that point in his business. And it was far more than what he did, you know, while he was taking this time to deal with this tragedy. And what it did was it reawakened his business, it reawakened his list. And got him excited about his business, got his prospects excited about the business. And so, I guess it's a long story, but it just goes to show you, you don't have to do $1 million, and you don't have to do $100,000, you don't have to do $50,000, you don't have to do $10,000. But what these techniques will let you do is, they'll let you gain almost instant momentum in your business. And the key is your first launch can be a few thousand, it could be a few hundred dollars. But once you learn these techniques, you'll build momentum within your business. And then maybe you'll have one of these huge launches down the road.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things for people to understand, these guys who did, like Frank with $370,000 in 9 minutes, well, that was all that he was going to sell. He mm-hmm. sold out that seminar.
Yep.
But Frank has spent a lot of time developing the experience in the marketing, developing the contacts, developing the product, the credibility in the market. Same thing with John Reese. He's been at this for a long time. But if people realize that just getting started, doing a rollout, and planning it in such a way that you actually make money. I mean, my first product rollout was a long time ago, and I made quite a nice income from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I really didn't have a whole lot more to work with than the average person could put together in a couple of weeks,
mm-hmm.
except the experience. Everybody has this experience that other people are going to want. The key is get a product that's worthwhile, that solves a problem, roll it out in a planned, intelligent way, and all of a sudden, instead of just having a product where you're scrambling for sales, if you plan it right and you do the basics in advance, you know, planning for an affiliate program, thinking about how you're going to convert customers to affiliates, how you're going to do your joint ventures, all of these things, you cut that curve so much that it's almost impossible for someone who hasn't done it to really understand the amount of energy and time and money that can be saved by using, you know, a system like the one that you're going to describe.
Mm-hmm. I think, you know, when you're looking at a business, personally, I think one of the most important things in business is momentum. If you've got momentum, it's almost like, you know, you're watching a basketball game or a football game, and it can be so intangible, but you can sense it, you can see it. And when you have momentum in your business, just great things start to happen. You feel more positive about your business. You put in more productive hours. You attract better clients. You attract more prospects. You attract joint venture partners. You attract people that want to work with you, that want you to promote their product, on and on and on. So momentum's a really powerful thing. And I know a lot of people don't have it. I know you've been to a lot of seminars, Paul. I've been to a lot of seminars. You go to a seminar and you can just see there's some people are just walking around and it's almost like there's a vacant look in their eyes because they just, their business is going nowhere. They're just desperate. They're hoping. I mean, hope is like the most evil word in business. If you're just hoping something's going to happen, if you're just checking your email every 5 minutes, and what that is it's almost like a lottery mentality. You're just hoping that, you know, your winning ticket came in and some guy with a huge list is going to email you and say, can I promote your product or something? Hope is just, like I said, it's an evil word. And, you know, if you design your business properly and you roll it out properly, that gives you instant momentum, instant traction in the marketplace. And you mentioned your first product launch. The first time I rolled out something, the first time I sold something, was I remember this was late 1996, and I was sort of in a desperate spot. I don't know if you've ever heard this story, Paul, but mm-hmm. but I was, you know, I committed career suicide, corporate career suicide. I was in the corporate world, and I just couldn't handle it. I was a square peg in the round hole, and one day I just quit. And the only problem was I had a new baby or a 1-year-old at the time, and I quit my job. And my wife went and found a job, and I was Mr. Mom for a while. And then, after several years of that, my wife just said, I can't, you know, I want to be home with the kids. It's your turn. And I committed career suicide. So I'm like, okay, what do I do? You know, it doesn't look too good in your resume that says I was home taking care of babies for years, at least not in the corporate world. So I went, and this is actually sort of a funny story. I just didn't know what to do. And so I decided I was going to go back to school, and I applied for graduate school, and I actually got into grad school, and I was going to study finance. I was going to get a master's in finance. And this is something, Paul, I'm pretty sure you don't know. I actually started my first e-zine list with the express purpose of looking good on a resume to get into grad school. I thought if I was publishing a newsletter, a financial type newsletter I had this vision of 600 people on my list. If I get 600 people on that list, I could put that on my resume and maybe get into grad school. Because grad school is like getting a job. It's like you know, staying out home taking care of babies isn't good. So I actually started that list to see if, you know, to put on a resume to get into grad school. So anyways, I'm sorry for going on so long about this. But I got accepted into graduate school, and this is all happening at the end of 96. I was about to start school in January 97. And I had this list, and I decided to start selling a product, and I put it on sale, like, I think December 31st of 1996. And I didn't have a sophisticated rollout strategy, but I made a few sales. And, you know, maybe a couple $1,000s in sales in the first week of January. And then I went into my first class, and I was sitting there in the lecture, and it was a fairly big lecture room for a graduate class. I mean, it was like, you know, 50 or 60 or 70 or 80 people in there. And I'm sitting in there, and this is like, you know, an hour and a half long class. And I've got, you know, got this new business with $2,000 in sales. And about 30 minutes into that lecture, I just stood up and I walked out. And that was the end of my graduate degree, my graduate school. Just
so much for all those people who say that you have to have the degree to make money.
I just you know, looked around, stood up, walked out, called them up the next day, said, cancel everything, I'm out of here. So anyways, but I mean, it was that initial momentum for making a few couple $1,000s in sales, and I could see the future. I mean, literally, I could see the future at that point. And, you know, so that's what, I mean, it wasn't a huge rollout, and certainly it wasn't sophisticated compared to what I've developed, but it was enough. And there were a few pieces of, even back then, I just stumbled onto a few pieces and developed that quick couple of $1,000s, and I could just see the future. And
when did you start studying Dan Kennedy's stuff?
Boy, that was not until 2 or 3 years ago. I mean, I was already had all this stuff developed, and I stumbled on Dan maybe in 2002 or 2003.
So you did this with no real marketing training?
Yeah, I don't know how I came up with it. I think what happened was I did so many of these launches, and I did them one after another, after another, after another, and it was just trial and error. It was like, oh, that.
Your first one?
The first one? A part of it was a personality defect. It was like what I did was I delivered a bunch of value ahead of time because I was afraid to ask people for money. And I think that, you know, I just didn't want to ask them for money until I had delivered a whole bunch of stuff. In doing so, I built up this relationship, and then I preyed on that relationship, and that really helped. And so I saw how that really worked, and then always had this feedback going with the people on my list. Then I just started to add in these different components, one after another, as I went through each launch. And, yeah, it was all trial and error, but I've literally done, I think it's probably it's between 25 and 30 product launches of my own. Plus I've been, you know, involved in a whole bunch more with other people. And, you know, it's like anything. You do it enough, and you start to figure stuff out.
How many of those launches were along the lines of the one you did at the NX seminar, where you want to tell that story?
Which one are you referring to?
The most recent one. You came up with the idea right there?
Oh, well,
basically.
Yeah. Well, I mean, at the Onyx, you know, is what I sold there. Is that what you're referring to? Is product launch, the product launch workshop. And each one of these is a really long story. I don't want to bore people too much. But when I say 25 to 30 launches, one thing I want to be real clear on is I have not come up with 25 or 30 new products. You know, that might be, oh gosh, I'd have to think, but maybe 5 or 6 new products in there. The rest of them are relaunches of existing products. You know, especially the relaunches I've literally, it's been cash on demand type of thing. It's like, oh boy, I'll tell you what, is I bought a new house in 2000, and you know, one thing I'm famous or infamous for is 6 figures in 7 days. That was the first thing that started to get me noticed in the marketing world is I did this launch. It was in spring of 2000, where I, you know, had a small list and, you know, put together a product launch and did $106,000 in sales, of which like $103,000 was profit. And I did that with just a very small list. And no joint venture partners with a brand new product, you know, that didn't even exist really when I started selling. And so I told that story to a few people, and they heard 6 figures in 7 days or 6 and 7, and it started to spread throughout the marketing world that I had done this. And now those numbers actually seem quaint compared to what I've done and what other people have done since then. But back then, that was big news. But I actually did that 6 and 7 to buy a house. I already owned one house. I was buying another. And instead of getting, you know, what they call a bridge loan, like I wasn't ready to sell my old house and I needed the down payment from the old house for the new house, blah, blah, blah. Needed $70,000. Did the launch, came, you know, made $103,000, whatever. And so I was able to buy the house. But then after you buy a house, a lot of, this is what I didn't realize when I bought the house because it was a brand new house. Well then, you know, I had to finish the basement and that was $25,000, and I had to put in the landscaping, and that was, you know, $15,000. And, you know, it was one thing after another like that. And then I started doing product launches, specifically like, oh man, I got this big bill I've got to pay for. You know, I don't want to pull that out of savings, so I'm going to put together a launch. So specifically like with Yonex, that was again where I had a big, it was a tax bill, and I put a lot of money into a real estate investment. So, you know, I came up with, you know, with a product idea in literally in a couple of weeks. I mean, really the product didn't get nailed down until a couple hours before I walked up on stage and told people about it. So I don't know how many times I've done it on that spur of the moment, but it's been a few, definitely a few.
The key point, one of the reasons I wanted people to hear that story, when you practice this stuff and you have the experience and you have the confidence, you can go from, what was your first product, $700 a year?
Yeah.
For an email newsletter on the stock market,
mm-hmm.
the commodities market, I forget, to $15,000, was it?
Yeah.
For how many hours of personal time?
Well, actually, I didn't totally nail it down. You know, I was thinking about 10 hours when I, you know, it sort of was my target, but I didn't actually specify it.
So $1,500 an hour per person on the call.
Yeah.
That's not bad.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you get to the point where you have the confidence and you understand these techniques and you practice them, you actually can get good enough that you can nearly create money out of thin air.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's something that people need to realize when they're listening to the actual techniques when we get into that.
Yep. Yeah.
And
you know,
the other thing is Jeff had practically no marketing experience when he started that first list.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of business sense, no marketing experience.
Mm-hmm. I don't even know how much business sense I had either.
I do. I remember discussions we used to have on the list. You always had good common sense and good insight.
Yeah, but that was a few, probably a few years after I've been doing business. Yeah, sometimes it's such a strange trip. It's been crazy.
Okay, so Jeff says he had no business and no marketing experience, and he still started a business that expanded into what he's doing today.
Yeah, I mean,
so
I,
if you don't feel like you know anything, you're right there where he was when he started.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'd never sold anything in my life. Didn't think beyond that. I just, if you would have put the world's professions on a big timeline and said which one are you least likely to be able to do, I would have put sales at the absolute end of the least likely. It has been amazing. And it's funny because Paul, you and I have known each other for a large chunk of that time, and
well, it's since 95 at some point.
Yeah, I think it was more like 97 if I had to guess.
No? No?
Yeah.
95 or 96, you were one of the first people on my newsletter list.
It could have been 96.
And that started in 96.
Yeah, it was.
So you were on the list, you were on the discussion list before that.
Huh.
I have the post somewhere.
Yeah. I do too, actually.
First off, and this is something that you're really good at. Let's say you take this person who has life experience, doesn't know how to turn that into a product. What would you recommend to them?
You know, there's a few key pieces that I owe all my success to. And one of them is always focusing on building a list. And two is always focusing on selling things that people want. And that list gives you the ability, you know, the first one, having that list gives you the ability to find out what people want. It's so much easier to sell something to people if they want it. You know, if it's really the thing that they're looking for that's going to solve their problems, or they think is going to solve their problems. The absolute first thing is to work on, in my opinion, especially if you have, well, just for anything, is to build the list. Build the list first. Build the list even if you don't even know. If you just have a general topic of expertise, a general area that you know about. If you know about growing tomatoes and you think that you might be able to sell a product about growing tomatoes, or there might be somewhere, somehow, money in this idea of growing tomatoes.
That's how Ryan got started.
Ryan? Really?
He built the list. He had no idea what he was going to do with
it. Yeah, and really, that was the way it was for me. I told you I built that list, you know, for grad school. Then it started getting big, a lot bigger than 600 people quickly. And people kept on saying, well, you know, it's a free list. What good is it? And to tell you the truth, in 1996, I didn't know. But I did know that if I had a list of people that were reading my stuff and felt a connection to me, that sooner or later, I was going to be able to figure it out. And I did. I mean, and now it's a lot easier. I mean, that was, you know, back then, things were a lot harder. Some things are harder now, but a lot of things were very hard. Like, I mean, I spent a lot of time convincing people that really was a free list, that if they signed up, that I would really send this thing to them for free. And I mean, every day I'd be getting these questions. It's like, why are you sending it for free? What's the catch? You know, it can't really be free. Nothing's for free.
And nowadays, they want it all for free.
Right. It was funny. But yeah, if you build the list of the general topic area and start sending them stuff, when you ask them what they want, they're going to tell you. The other thing is you always want to focus on creating a dialogue at all times. You're always in your emails looking for feedback from people. And every time they ask you a question or send, you know, a question is as good as a suggestion, because the question is telling you what they really want to know, what's their burning desire. And so, I mean, I have a folder in my email program where anytime I get a question, I drag that question and drop it in that folder. And then, you know, when it comes time to decide what to produce in terms of a product, it's just a matter of going over that folder and see what are the questions people keep on asking you.
Yeah, if I could throw something in here on that.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about a technique that I always recommend to my clients in the past about putting a very short personalized email into your follow-up sequence.
Mm-hmm.
2 or 3 days after the person signs up. And I got one today. And honest, Jeff, I thought it was a personal email. Paul from, and then the publisher's name was the subject line.
Mm-hmm.
I opened it up. It says, Paul, hey, I noticed that you just signed up for my newsletter. Thanks for subscribing. I hope you get a lot out of it. Drop me a line sometime and let me know what you think. That was the entire email except for the signature.
Uh-huh.
That little trick right there, putting that in 2, 3, maybe 4 days, I don't recommend more than 4 or 5 days, after the person signs up, makes a dramatic difference in the relationship that people feel that they have, provided you make it very personal like that.
Uh-huh. That's a pretty good copy.
Wasn't it?
Yeah. You know where that copy came from? That was in Product Launch Formula.
What?
whoever put that in there, that's exact. I wrote that copy. Ew. Because yes, you gave me that idea years ago, and I've been taking it and playing with. I've been using that for years, and I put that in my course. And you know, there's a lot of things in my course that people can just, you know, cut and paste into their own stuff, and I've encouraged them to. And that's one of them. That's my exact copy.
I went out and told Nancy after I read it, this is beautiful. I didn't even realize that you had written it.
That's great.
Seriously.
Yeah.
How many people reply to that email?
A lot of people do. A lot of people do. And you know, the other key thing, and you taught me this part too, is when people respond to that, I always respond back to them. So like when they get that note, which is an autoresponder, it's not a personal email, it just looks like a personal email. So they get that personal email, and then a lot of times they'll respond back and say, hey Jeff, thanks, I'll let you know. Or, you know, wow, I can't believe you sent me a personal email or whatever. And whenever I get those emails from them, I always reply back, even if it's just like a smiley face or, you know, thanks for your note. Because then it really does cement the relationship.
Right. There's an actual conversation that occurred there.
Yeah.
Which most people don't do.
Yeah.
And that reminds me, I've got 300 and some emails to answer still from the last time I asked my listeners.
Yeah. But, yeah, if you go to my, you know, if you go to 6 and 7 and sign up for my email series there, you'll get that exact copy, you know, I think 2 or 3 days in from me. And,
that's wild.
It's,
I just got it this evening.
Yeah.
That Anna.
From who?
Anna. I don't know that I want to mention the letter.
Okay. Yeah. That's fine. Yeah. I'm not sure, but yeah. She bought my course. I'm sure she did.
And she, I'll tell you what, she studies. She asks great questions. This is another thing for people to be thinking about as they listen to the rest of this. If you don't understand something, go out and ask people, because there are people out there who've done what you need to do who will help you do it right. That's a huge thing. There are enormous resources out there,
right,
where people will help you with it. If you get things going and you say, I need some help with, I'm in the middle of, and I need to fine-tune this,
mm-hmm.
they'll go, oh, someone who's actually doing something, and they'll take the time to help you.
Yep.
If you go out there and say, what do I do? They don't want to hear from you.
Mm-hmm.
If you say, I'm doing, how do I do better? People will crawl out of the woodwork to help you out.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I just wrote a very lengthy email to a list that both that you and I know well, and it was basically that exact sentiment, because I tell you, Paul, I'm wildly successful right now. I'm more successful than I could have ever dreamed in just about every aspect of my life. But, like I said, there was a time 10 years ago when I was not successful. And the key thing that I learned that changed everything was that there's a lot of people out there that are a lot smarter than me in a lot of different areas that are willing to teach. You know, I had this huge ego for a large chunk of my life where I thought I could do everything and I was the smartest person in the world. And when I realized that there's other people that have spent their lives studying things, and it doesn't, I'm not just talking about making money or doing business. I'm talking about, it could be relationships. It could be raising kids. It could be anything.
Teaching your kids to ski double diamond.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it could be, there are people, and frankly, you know, when I learned this lesson was, you know, I was probably near rock bottom, and I was sitting there late at night watching infomercials on TV, and about the 10th time I saw Tony Robbins, I finally picked up the phone and I ordered his course, and I realized that Tony Robbins knew a lot of things about, you know, all kinds of different things that I didn't know. And that was just a start of a journey. That's what I learned from him, that there's experts in all kinds of different areas. And if you study them and study under them, and maybe it's pay money to them. You know, now I can afford to pay money to just about anyone for just about anything. And so that really helps short circuit things. But, you know, for years I had to do it without paying money, just, you know, following the breadcrumbs that people left behind. But you're right. There are so many people out there that are so bright and beyond bright, have spent their lives studying certain things. You know, there's so much wisdom to be had if you just ask and if you show a passion for it.
It's an interesting thing when you start learning something and you go out and you practice it and you, let's say you do a basic rollout or a basic product creation, and maybe it takes you a month to write a 40-page ebook and a sales letter for it and to get for sale.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the next time, you know, in the meantime, you're out learning. The next time, maybe it takes 2 weeks and it's a 50-page or 75-page book.
Mm-hmm.
You're not as bogged down in the details because you know you can do it.
Right.
And if you keep collecting this information and this experience from other people, eventually speeds up. That curve accelerates dramatically.
Yep.
As long as you're willing to listen and test what you're doing. And that's another key point.
Mm-hmm.
Once you learn something, test it.
Mm-hmm.
Find a better way to do it.
Absolutely. Like with, you know, last October when I rolled out my product launch formula course. It's a big home study course with 20 discs, CDs and DVDs and two books.
Manuals.
Yeah, okay. It's huge. And, you know, for someone, like, especially someone starting out, especially maybe they're in the information, want to get into information marketing, and it's to look at, I mean, it's very impressive looking. It's very professional looking. It's intimidating for someone to think about doing something like that. And the deal is that, you know, 9 months before that, I had done a different course. This is on trading and stock market trading. And that was another home study course, and I made a bunch of errors with that, just like with the physically putting it together and getting it shipped out to customers and stuff. And that first one was, it was tough, but the second one sure was a heck of a lot easier because I'd had that experience. And, you know, you just got to get out there and do it. And you don't have to do that. You know, your first product can be an ebook. I mean, I sold information for 10 years before I tried to do a big home study course like that. So it's just a learning process.
It's an interesting learning process, too. So let's say they've got their product, they've taken their life experience, they've figured out what topic they're going to talk about, they've set up, whether it be through a place like AWeber or a listserv program on their own web host or mm-hmm. one of the other list hosting services, they've got a list set up so that people can subscribe. They've got their product.
Mm-hmm.
What's the first thing that the guy with $200 in his pocket that he can afford to spend and $20 a month, the guy who's pretty much where you were when you started, what's the first thing they should do to start building, and maybe even do it before the product is finished?
Right.
Start building their market.
Yeah. Well, first of all, just to step back real quick, the list. So for someone who's just starting out, say they've got a topic that they want to do. The first thing I would do is I would put up a website, put up a blog-based website. You know, the current blogging software I like that's free is WordPress. It's for free and easy to install. So say you just have a topic, and let's go back to growing tomatoes, and you think there's a market out there. Put up a website, put up a blog, and I can't go into all the technical stuff on this call, obviously, but put up 10 or 20 posts on that blog and make them keyword focused. And again, we can't go into all the technical stuff, but research keyword phrases. And so like, say growing big tomatoes is a keyword phrase. You would do a blog entry on growing big tomatoes. And then say, eliminating tomato insects that eat my tomato plants was another key phrase. You would do a blog post on that. And you do 20 blog posts on the key phrases that get searched most around growing tomatoes. And again, I'm sorry if I'm moving too fast because we got a lot of ground to cover. But if you do that, you'll start to draw in search engine traffic. It will happen automatically. When you start to pull in that traffic, you will put up a form on your website to collect email addresses, and that's how you get the start of a list without spending any money. The other thing you could do is you could go advertise like on Google AdWords, you know, do a pay-per-click type of stuff and try to pull people into your list. So again, I'm moving super fast, but start building a list that way. And then as you're building your list, you start publishing to them about growing tomatoes. And I like to do it, like you mentioned, AWeber. I love AWeber. In fact, I'm getting a private label company set up run by AWeber because I love them so much. Then what I would do is I do what I call a blended autoresponder, and that's just my term. And what that means is the first X number, 5, 3, 5, 10, 15, 20 emails that they get will be programmed by your autoresponder. So if someone joins today, they're going to get the first 5 are pre-written, and they're going to get them on a regular schedule. And the reason you do that is because you want people, when they first sign up, to get your best content, the best thing you can write, the emails that you sweat blood over, just to create that initial relationship. And so then they join, they get those 5 or 6 or 10 or 15 emails. But it only takes a few, so don't worry about 15 being intimidating. Just put 5 together that are really good and space them out every few days. And that's how you build a relationship with them. Later on, you can send them, you know, you might write something off the top of your head, and it might not be the greatest thing you've ever written in your life. But that's okay, because the first five that they've gotten are the best that you can write, that you've worked really hard, and they tell a story, and they suck them in, and they create a relationship. And you do that just the same way you create a relationship with anyone else in the real world, by being interesting, by being interested in them, by asking them questions about their lives, by talking to them about the things that are important to their lives. And, of course, this is all about growing tomatoes. You know, why is growing tomatoes big, important to you? Why is it important to the other person? How can you connect about growing tomatoes? So that's how you build that relationship. And then somewhere in there, and I know I'm covering a lot of ground really fast.
This is good. But you can use the pause button.
And then somewhere in there, when you're mailing them, you start asking them questions. You start asking them what they want to know about growing tomatoes. You start asking them, boy, hey, do you have problems with, you know, pests like, you know, eating your tomatoes? Do you have problems with your neighbor's dogs running through your tomato plants? You know, what kind of tomatoes are you interested in growing? Are you interested in heirloom tomatoes? You know, what do you use your tomatoes for? Do you use like those wall of water things, you know, that lets you plant 2 weeks early? Do you grow tomatoes from seed, or do you just go down and buy some plants at Walmart? And so you start trying to be interactive. I don't know what your numbers are, Paul, but, you know, when you ask a question, it's a very small percentage that will actually respond. But it doesn't, you know, so don't expect everyone to respond. Don't expect 50%. Don't expect even 10%. Don't even expect 5% to respond.
But, I remember the days when I would get 50%, but that was back when that part of things was easier.
Right.
People didn't get tons of emails, so they read everything.
Right.
But now it can go anywhere from 0.5% up to maybe 5% if you've got a good relationship
mm-hmm.
with your list. 10% if you're really good.
Mm-hmm. But basically, you're looking for that interaction. And, you know, it's funny, Paul, I told you something that I did a couple months ago, and then you told me, oh, yeah, I did that years ago. And what I did was it was a fairly lengthy email, and
you put the thing at the end that said, if you've got this far?
Yeah. If you've got this far, let me know. But beyond that, what I did, and I think this is the real key, is a lot of times when you ask a question, people think it's rhetorical. They don't think you are really asking them. And so, what I did that time, and I've done it since, is I said, you know, what kind of tomatoes are you interested in growing? And so you ask them that, and you say, I really want to know. So hit the reply button in your email program right now and type in your response and send it to me. I guarantee you I'll read it personally. And so I actually give them an instruction. Press the reply button in your email program and write and type in your response. And when I did that, the response was through the roof.
I'll bet. I mean, I actually included a thing that just said, hit this link. It was the mail to link with the pre-configured subject line.
Mm-hmm.
Hit this link and hit send.
Mm-hmm.
I expected to get a whole bunch of blank emails. Some huge percentage had comments in them.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, people just can't send a blank email.
Mm-hmm.
I discovered that too. That's a really interesting thing.
Yeah.
A few people will, but a big chunk of them will give you information. Surprisingly, I got hundreds of testimonials from what I thought was just going to be, you know, blank emails.
Right.
There was no idea in my mind that people were going to send me testimonials. It was all about, I made it was the subject line.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of my really long newsletters. And as you know, for me, a long newsletter is 15 or 20 pages. But people read it, and a very high percentage responded.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I love the idea of just telling them, hit reply.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of a key principle of direct marketing, which is really what we're talking about. Making things simple and telling them what you expect them to do. You know, in this case, it was huge. It was just absolutely huge. And I'm going to use that over and over and over. It's just one of those things where, you know, this happens a lot. You know, I'm just about to launch something, just about to send an email, just about to do something. And at the last second, I get an idea and I try it out and boom, you know, so a lot of times they don't work, but sometimes they really do. And then that's just another quiver or another arrow in your quiver that you use going forward. And that's really how I've developed all this stuff is because, like I said, I've done so many of them. You know, I've tried a whole lot of different things, and occasionally one of them works really well. That's one way you get interaction. So as your public,
it also increases the likelihood that those people are going to respond to other things,
right,
including a sales offer.
Mm-hmm.
Actually done that, you know, taken some advice and take the small step first, then it significantly increases the likelihood that those people are going to buy something from you.
Right. Well, Paul, you've got experience like in real sales. And
lots of it.
Yeah, and I don't. But I do know that, you know, I've read a little bit about it since I've started getting into it. And I know one of the things you do is you try to get, you know, a lot of times, especially like if you're in someone's home trying to sell them a vacuum cleaner or something, you know, a real hard sell. But even on a car lot, they do this all the time at car lots when they're trying to sell you a car, is they get you to say yes. They get you to say yes to the simplest little thing. And once people start saying yes, it makes them a lot easier for them to continue to say yes, which is basically what you just said. If you get them to respond in one fashion, you know, even the simplest little fashion, it basically builds in this greased chute for them to keep on saying yes, even if it's, you know, 3 months later.
Right. There are some subtle distinctions there. What you've described definitely works. What I was talking about is a little bit different, but it has the same effect. It's different in the sense that it takes out the fear. You're no longer an unknown.
Mm-hmm.
They have communicated with you, and it was not painful.
Mm-hmm.
In the vacuum cleaner sale, I never did that type of in-home sales unless mm-hmm. somebody called me and asked me to come out. But in the vacuum cleaner sale, I have a friend who swore that if he could get a person to grab the handle and turn the machine on, they would buy it. Getting them involved with the product
mm-hmm.
is another way to do that. You can do that with a lot, especially a digital product, or even a physical product that you're selling online. Give them a quiz, you know, where they score themselves and, you know, make it a very honest appraisal of what's going on. Give them a quiz where they score themselves, or a script scores their answers, and they get some pointers about what they need to learn. You don't necessarily have to teach them. You just tell them what they need to learn. You know, the information is in the product. But again, it's a painless interaction. The soft yes. I think Alex calls it the soft yes.
Mm-hmm. Or shy yes.
Shy yes, that's it.
There's another piece, too. Like, one of the things, there's a lot of mental triggers I'd like to hit. You know, one of them is the idea of reciprocity. Whereas if you give something to someone, they will feel some sense of obligation to give something back to you. And there's actually, when you ask them for their opinion, in my opinion, when you ask someone, what do you think about this? What do you want to know about this? I'm creating a product and I need your input so I can make the best product. I personally think there's a little bit of reciprocity. You're giving someone, what you're giving is your attention.
And your respect.
Yep. And there is some reciprocity there that will make them feel better about you and more inclined to help you out down the road.
They're also involved in the product.
Right.
In this case, they're actually more than involved. They're invested.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a good idea, even if you're not thinking of the psychological triggers. I did this recently. You probably noticed with the people on my list. I wanted to know what their big problems are.
Mm-hmm.
And I genuinely want to know what their big problems are.
Mm-hmm.
If I can solve problems for them, they're happy.
Yep.
The more money they make, you know, there's lots of people who make money just reading my newsletter and never buy anything. Eventually, those people are going to come around and do something at a time that I'm not expecting. And it works that way. It's developing the relationship. And every time you do something like this, the reason that these things work, when marketers talk about it, you know, people would hear you and I talking about this and think, you know, this is all planned manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not. It's an actual discussion of how well-intentioned, well-meaning people who want to be mutually helpful interact. It's just a way of describing it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I'm doing my best to describe the psychology behind it, but really,
the reciprocity thing is exactly what you described as your character flaw in the beginning, which is give first.
Mm-hmm.
And it works.
Yeah.
Because, it, you know, it's showing people that you are someone that can be dealt with safely.
Mm-hmm.
And they do appreciate it.
Right.
It does work. I mean, this is from, what's the book? Influence.
Right. Influence
The Psychology of Persuasion by Robert Cialdini, Cialdini. Buy the book, folks.
Yep, it's hands down the single best marketing education you can get, in my opinion. It's a $12 book, or maybe it's $15, I don't know, something like that. It's so cheap, you just have to buy it.
Yeah, go to Amazon, do a search on Influence, and the author's name is Robert Cialdini, Cialdini.
Mm-hmm.
It's easily one of the best investments you'll ever make.
So you got your list interacting, and basically this is helping, you know, define what your product's going to be. It's telling you the hot buttons that people, you know, in your topic area are interested in. And then somewhere in here, you know, you might have a real good idea what your product is from what they've told you. You can do one of those 12 question survey, Marlon Sanders teaches it.
12 product survey.
Yeah, 12 product survey, where you say, like, you've got a bunch of ideas from what people have written you, then create 12 product ideas and show people a list, and you can either send them an email with that list and ask them, or you can send them to a web form with all those, and you say, you know, which of these would you likely buy in the next 90 days? And it's basically a poll, and they're telling you what they want. And so I like to do that.
Can I stop you for 1 second?
Yeah, sure.
I want to emphasize something you just said. The question was, which would you be most likely to buy in the next 90 days? If you're looking to launch a product or to get a product that will get people moving, you want to ask the question that way. I ran a survey similar to this recently, and I asked the question in a much softer format because I wanted to know the spread. But if you ask the question that way, you will find that one or two of those products will be way out ahead of everything else. And that actually forces people to say, if I'm going to part with money, what am I going to get?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a really important phrasing. I don't like to interrupt you, but that's a really important thing.
So then as you're getting closer, what I like to do is I like to nail down. So, I mean, say, you know, the number one thing is like, how to keep rabbits from eating your tomato plants. So you're going to put together a product on how to stop rabbits from eating your tomato plants. And this is because of, you know, the surveying you just did and the feedback from your list. So now, like, what I like to do is really nail down exactly, like, the form, you know, whether it's going to be an ebook, whether it's going to be a teleseminar, whether it's going to be a physical book, whether it's going to be a video. How big a product? Is it going to be a big home study course and keeping those rabbits out, or is it going to be something smaller? And you
or
know,
is it going to be a hard physical product like a shotgun?
Yeah, there you go, or paintball guns. That's what, you know, we actually have problems with deer eating. I mean, we got rabbits, but the deer stuff, they really tear stuff apart. And I keep thinking the paintball gun's the answer there. But because my neighbors wouldn't be happy if I went out there with a shotgun. What I do, and I've never seen anyone teach this, is I start to segment my list down, and I'll send a question, and it might be working on this product to help you keep rabbits away from your tomato plants. And I'm trying to decide if it should be a book or a video. And I'm not getting the phrasing perfect here, but what I do is I'll send that question to maybe back when I had a list of 5,000 people. I would send that question to like 300 to 600 people. And then I would take all the information back from them. You know, basically we're talking about qualitative answers. I'd actually try to get people to write essays back. So it wouldn't be just a yes or a no click. And then I would take all that information and I would take a look at it and see what that information told me and say, maybe it says that they don't want a digital product. They want a physical product. And then I'm like, okay, well, should it be a video? Or should it be an audio CD, or should it be a book? So then I'd send out another question to the next 300 to 600 people on my list. And I'd keep on iterating that until I got down to exactly what people wanted. And this wouldn't always be, I'm not claiming this is the most scientific thing in the world, but when you start getting, you know, each time I do that, I get anywhere from, you know, 30, 40, 50, 60 responses. And after I went through that several iterations, I would end up with the product where I felt like I absolutely nailed exactly the product that they wanted in exactly the form they wanted. And, you know, I found that to be extremely powerful.
Yeah, that by itself is an extremely handy thing. One other thing that you pointed out there that will probably have slipped by a lot of people, and you've seen me do this, I do it in a little bit more automated way where everybody gets different questions. They all get them at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And they think they're all answering the same question.
Mm-hmm.
But I might have 30, I think I did one where I had 32 different questions and nobody saw more than one. Break your list up into little groups, ask a different question of each one, and if you randomize the list before you do this so that you don't, you know, pick all of the people that have webmaster in their email address, which is going to be a different type of person than the person who has, you know, 1.4750@compuserve.com,
mm-hmm.
you can get massive amounts of information without badgering your people to answer question after question after question. And that's a really important thing that you just pointed out. And it's something that I've seen very, very few people do. I mean, I think John does this occasionally.
Yeah. I guess if people are doing it really well, you can't tell.
Yeah, that's the trick.
Yep.
That's the trick. But that's a really important point as far as segmenting your list, breaking your list up into smaller groups.
Mm-hmm.
Before you start sending out the second group, you may find that you have to send to, say, 800 people to get enough answers to be useful.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe only 100. The first people who get on a list when it's new are usually very responsive. We won't get into the psychology and the reasons why that happens, but it's very real. But anyway, pay attention to your groupings. Make sure that you're getting enough answers back, and then you'll know how big a group to ask the second question.
Right.
And refining it that way really does. I mean, you say it's not real scientific, but I forget the name of the theory. Basically, all of these little variables tend to cancel each other out. And if you listen to enough people long enough, if they don't want what you're moving towards, they'll push back.
Mm-hmm.
And it tends to even itself out towards what, you know, unless you make a really big mistake in the beginning and then you ask a leading question. But even then, if the information is what they want, the format can make a big difference in how many copies you sell initially. But people will come to you and ask you for it in the other format if they, you know, if they really need it that way.
Right. And basically, if you do what we've talked about so far to this point, where you build a list and then you build a relationship with them by sending them good stuff, you know, focus on those first few issues, and then you start the process of making your list very interactive and get people writing back to you, and then you do this kind of a survey, there's just no way you can fail. How you execute from this point forward can make huge difference, you know, orders of magnitude in how well you do. But if you do just what we've talked about so far, you'll be so light years ahead of almost everyone out there. You'll be in the upper, you know, 2 or 3 percentile. You know, and unless you just pick a complete loser of a market that's just, you know, people don't buy in, that you cannot sell product in that market, there's just no way you can fail. And even if you pick one of those loser markets, at this point you would have figured it out by now. And it wouldn't have cost you, it would cost you almost nothing to get to this point.
And the nice thing, people who are listening to this, think about, you know, the whole story about, you know, he was an overnight success, only took him 6 years to get to that night.
Mm-hmm.
Or 20 years to get to that night. All of the things that Jeff's been talking about are positioning yourself for a launch.
Right.
This is 100% of what goes into positioning yourself for a launch. It's really something that takes a little bit of thought to wrap your head around the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you do building up to, you know, figuring out what general topic you want, what specific subtopic these people want information on, what format it goes in. When they tell you what they want to learn, there will be certain things that are repeated over and over again that are massively frustrating for the people in your market, and they'll keep coming up. You'll see certain responses that include pain. The person is actually feeling some sort of negative emotion, pain, frustration, whatever it is. When they tell you this stuff, they're writing your sales letter for you.
Right.
The ultimate product research, your customer writes the sales letter for you by telling you what's important to them so that you can tell them, hey, you have this problem. I know you have because you told me you have. I've got the fix. And it's really easy. You go out and you spray dish soap on your tomatoes and it keeps these bugs off.
Mm-hmm.
and you do these other things, and it keeps the bunnies out.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've got some special secrets, and if you buy the upgraded package, we're going to send you out the gold screening to put around them, or whatever it is.
Right, right. They're writing your copy. I mean, sometimes they are literally writing your copy, where I've done these types of surveys, and there's been phrases in the responses that I've actually taken those, and they're subheads, or, you know, right in my sales letter. You know, it's amazing once you start listening. I say this over and over. I really like shooting fish in a barrel. I really like, and that's what this does. In fact, this takes that barrel and it makes it really, really small. I mean, if you do this, you end up with a product that you know people want. And they're not only writing your sales letter, but they're telling you their objections. And, you know, in any sales process, the most important thing you got to do is answer their objections. You don't hide from them. You always take those objections head on. I know that you've lost tomato plants every single year to these rabbits. And I know you don't think there's any way to keep your special rabbits out. They've been trained to defeat every anti-rabbit thing there is. But this new technique I've got will beat those rabbits because this, and this. You gotta hit those objections. So in this whole interactive process, they're giving you sales copy, they're telling you what they want, and they're telling you their big objections and their hot points.
How can a person read their own words, their own emotion, and their own desired solution and not want that?
Mm-hmm.
This is the most important lesson in writing sales copy, folks. If you really understand what your customers want, you don't have to play all these silly, ridiculous, manipulative, you know, hypnotic phrasing, NLP, blah, blah games. If you really know what people want and you've really got the aspirin for their headache, you don't have to play games. You just walk up and tell them, hey, yeah, here it is. You want more traffic for your website? I've got exactly this, and this solution that will fix it. You want to keep the bunnies out of your garden? I've got this, and this. Plant a few certain types of plants that we'll tell you about, whatever. You've got the answer to their problem or the aspirin for their specific headache. You don't need to be a world-class copywriter. You don't even need to be a good copywriter. You need to be a good parrot. Say back to them what they said to you and be able to deliver on what you promised them, and they will love you forever.
Absolutely.
Most important lesson you can learn for a copywriter. Mm-hmm. Learn to listen.
Mm-hmm. And really what this product launch process, I've said this before, the way I view it, you know, take it or leave it. If this turns a few neurons for you, great. The way I look at it is I'm taking the entire launch, which could be anywhere, it could be up to, you know, 6 weeks or more that you've actually got people involved in this. And I don't want that to scare people because I've actually done launches where I've conceived of the idea and done the launch and completed the launch within like 72 hours. So I've done, you know, you can do them on a short term, but some of these really, you know, real big ones, you know, might take 4 weeks or 6 weeks that you're building up to this and letting people be part of this. But I view it as one big long sales letter.
That's an interesting way to look at it.
Yeah, from the very first time they get an inkling of it till the time they can order it, I view it as a big long sales letter. And so, you know, the sales letter's got a headline that sucks people in, you know, then you take them down and you start to answer objections, and then you eventually tell them about the product. Maybe the headline, you define the problem, then you're answering objections, you give them the solution, you tell them exactly what's in the product, then you tell them what it costs, then you ask for the order. It's like an infomercial. You know, what's an infomercial, a 30-minute infomercial? Well, it's really 10 3-minute sales pitches. And one good thing to do is if you watch, like, go to the Harry Potter books. Like, every Harry Potter book, in the first chapter, they have to bring everyone up to speed because they can't assume that people have read every Harry Potter book up to that point. So in the first chapter, they have to give you a synopsis that sets up everything that's happened beforehand, sets up the characters, gives you the basic intro to the characters, and then moves you right into the story. And that's like this launch process is like that. There's a whole bunch of different discrete processors or pieces of information, communications that build on each other and build on each other, but you can never assume that people have seen every single thing along the way. Hopefully they have, because then you're just building towards this huge, hysterical product launch where people can't wait. But you also have to remember that a lot of people are dropping into the middle of the process, or they skipped pieces of the process. But yeah, I view it as one long sales process.
And that's interesting.
Yeah.
And every single piece that they're exposed to that they have a positive response to sort of develops that greased chute.
Right.
That's an interesting way of looking at it. I've never heard that before.
Yeah. In my mind, it works for me to think of it that way. You know, and it's a story. To me, the sales letters I write are always stories. What you're developing is a story. I think of it as a soap opera where they can't wait for the next piece of information about what's going to happen. First, you're just defining what the product is. They're dying to know what it's going to look like. What are all the pieces? What's it going to cost? What's involved? When it's going to get released? And you're gradually releasing these pieces one at a time. And gradually turning up the pressure and the intensity. It's like, I remember when I was in whatever, 10th or 11th grade and we're studying literature, they had a diagram they showed. It's a diagram of a novel. I can never remember which axis is which, but the vertical axis, the bottom, the horizontal axis is time, the vertical axis, axis is tension. And when you start off in the far left hand side of the graph and the tension's there is no tension. Throughout the story, the tension gradually builds and builds and builds and builds and builds until one is a climax. Well, the second to last page. If it's a 300-page book, it climaxes on page 299, and all of a sudden all the tension's resolved and it drops off. And that's the way a product launch is. You start off, you're just dropping a few hints. Some of you know that we've been developing a product. Well, I'll tell you what, we finally decided we're going to produce this product and growing and protecting your tomatoes from rabbits. It's coming soon. The product's 90% done. If you have anything that you really, really want me to cover in this product, you know, write back to me as soon as possible so I can make sure we get everything covered. But it looks like, you know, it's 90% done. We should be able to wrap this thing up in another few more weeks. I'll let you know more when, you know, we have something really concrete to tell you.
And when you build it up this way, by the time you're done, these cute little cottontails are evil Vorpal vampire bunnies ready to take out the tomatoes, the jalapenos, and the dog.
Yep.
And people are looking at it that way.
Yep. Yeah, you mentioned Dan Kennedy earlier, and one of the formulas he uses for copy is one of my favorites, and he calls it problem, agitate, solve, which means you define the problem, you agitate them, you get them really worked up about that problem. You know, really think about all those hours you put into your tomato plants last year.
I saw that exact phrase in an email I got today. This evening, in fact.
Which phrase?
Problem?
Yep.
Agitate, or agitation, solution.
Yeah. Yep. I don't know if Dan Kennedy invented that term. Probably not. But that's where I first heard it. And it's a model that I think tends to work pretty well, and I use it a lot.
Yeah, that's what I call the aspirin sale.
Right. Right.
Growing beautiful tomatoes is the, you know, the rose sale. I call that the rose sale.
Mm-hmm.
You're selling the positive, puffy, happy dream.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to make it out that these can't be very valuable things. But there's the rose sale and then there's the aspirin sale.
Mm-hmm.
And the aspirin sale is, oh my God, my head is killing me. Will somebody please do something? And you come along with extra strength, migraine, Excedrin.
Right.
And they go, oh, and they love you forever.
Mm-hmm.
If you sell somebody something nice, they will like you, but they'll be easily stolen away by the next guy selling something nice.
Mm-hmm.
If you fix their problems, they will be loyal customers forever. So if you want to develop a client base that will stick with you and will keep buying stuff from you, sell aspirin. Fix problems.
Yep.